Hi, everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Cooking with gas. Okay. Good morning. My name is Maria. I'm a recovered compulsive eater.
Hi, Maria.
And this is Holly.
And I'm Holly, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater as well.
Hi, Holly.
And we're going to talk about step one, which is in the first four chapters of the big book, starting with the doctor's opinion. Okay, so we're going to go over the doctor's opinion right now. And for me, if you're in the newcomer book, it's on XXI. So, the first word of the doctor's opinion is the word we. So, I was not meant to do this program alone. You're not meant to do this program alone. This is a we program. You know, self-sufficiency has gotten me in a ton of trouble. So, we are not meant to do this program alone. And the doctor in this story, Dr. Silkworth, treated a certain type of alcoholic. He treated a ton of them. And there was some that would leave the hospital where he would treat them at, and he would never see them again. But there was a certain type that he came to regard as hopeless that would come back over and over and over, despite getting separated from their alcohol. So that's the type that we're going to talk about today, the type that we've come to regard as hopeless. I am a compulsive eater of the hopeless variety. So, but I have recovered, so there's a lot of hope in this chapter. Other methods I have tried have failed completely. You know the other methods you've tried. If you hadn't tried them all, you wouldn't be here right now. I tried them all. They didn't work. They failed completely. So we're going to go to the next page. And it's going to say, we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. So this chapter primarily deals with the physical problem that we have. So we have to believe that we have this physical problem as well as a mental obsession. That's our mind problem. So what's the physical problem? The physical problem is that I have an allergy. Now, I don't break out in a rash from my allergy. However, if I ingest sugar or even a sugar substitute in my body, I'm going to break out in a phenomenon of craving. This will happen, you know, it could take, you know, this is going to happen. There's nothing that I could do about it. It's like standing in front of a tank, you know, waving a stick. That's how much I can do about it. The allergy is an abnormal reaction to the substance. So I have this abnormal craving. Now, my husband, he is not a compulsive eater. Louis has a Hershey Kiss. He can have one. Oh, it's so sweet. It's so good. It's nice. He puts it away. He's done. He might not have another one for another 2 months. Stuff will probably go bad. But me, if I have the Hershey Kiss, I'm going to finish the whole bag. I'm going to beg, borrow, and steal and go get more. And my binge, my last binge lasted from Christmas Day nonstop until probably about maybe the middle of January. Like, that's a long time to be eating and binging nonstop. And it really almost took my life because I was thinking, well, why am I here? I'm either eating and I'm miserable, or I'm not eating my allergic foods and I'm miserable. So why am I here? I didn't get heart disease. I didn't get diabetes. I got a ton of arthritis. I got depression. And that's what was going to take me out. Like, for me to think, you know, why am I here? And with the good life that I had, like, talk about ungrateful. You know, I have a beautiful family, and yet I was still wondering why I'm here. So it's telling us at the bottom of page, it'll be XXII in the book that has just the instructions in it. The last paragraph, last sentence says, it is imperative that a man's brain be clear before he is approached, as he has a better chance of understanding and accepting what we have to offer. So it's telling me I have to put my allergic foods down. The foods that cause an abnormal reaction, a phenomenon of craving, I have to put them down. Because if I don't, I'm not going to hear what's in the instructions. Like somebody who wants to recover from a heroin addiction and is still doing small amounts of heroin is not going to hear the instructions that are in the book. So we have to put the food down. So then we're going to go on to XX, is it? IV. And it's in the first full paragraph. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. So that's telling me that that's the reason why my husband can have the one piece of my alcoholic food and I can't. It doesn't happen to him, but it happens to me. Now, I have an allergy to sulfa. First time I experienced the allergy, my palms got really itchy and hot, and I'm like, oh, what is that? You know, what is that? Second dose that night, my throat was closing up. So then I knew, oh, crap, I have an allergy here. I can never have this drug again. Now, if I went to the doctor and the doctor said to me, well, Maria, you've got this cold. I'm going to give you just this antibiotic. It just has a little bit of sulfa. I know you're allergic, but it just has a little bit. You'll be fine. Would I take that? No. It's not safe for me to take that. So I don't ingest little bits of my allergen because it's not safe for me to do that, just like it wouldn't be safe for me to have the sulfa. So I'm not one to, like, read labels and is it, like, the 7th ingredient or the 10th ingredient. I don't want it on there at all. It tells me in that paragraph that we just read that these allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. So, for instance, if I'm allergic to sugar, do I have other forms of sugar? Evaporated cane juice, concentrated fruit juice, maltodextrin, all sugar. I don't have those because it says any form at all. Because I can never safely use these alcoholic foods in any form at all. Once I formed the habit and found I cannot break it, once having lost my self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. This is addiction. The last paragraph on that page is my favorite paragraph. I had been in these rooms for about 6 years, listening to this paragraph, listening to big book panel speakers, just like you are right now, and I never really heard it. I underlined it. I highlighted it. I knew it was important, but I never really got it. You know why? Because I never put the food down. So, now here I am, January a couple years ago. I've put the food down, and I'm telling my sponsor, I'm absolutely miserable. I'm crying. She was probably doing car wheels. I'm crying. I'm saying, this stuff tastes like crap. You don't have to worry about me being triggered by anything because it all tastes like crap. You know, I didn't like it at all. But on the way home from visiting my daughter, I was stuck in traffic on the Schuylkill Expressway. So there was a CD from a speaker on Vision for You that I had in my car, and I thought, well, I'll be a good girl, I'll listen to the speaker. And he went over this paragraph, and it was like the light, like, boom. I heard it for the first time, and you know why? Because I had put the food down. This is why you can't work this program and still be ingesting the alcohol or your alcoholic foods. Okay, why do I eat? Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by the alcohol, produced by the food. I put that piece of candy in my mouth, and I say, oh, you know, everything's all right. Things are fine. Life is good. I'm not scared anymore. It lasts for about 5 seconds. And then I gotta have more. And now I've triggered the allergy. So then I'm really gonna have more. Because remember, the allergy is manifested in a phenomenon of craving. So it's like standing in front of the tank. The tank has mowed me down now. I'm gonna give in. I'm gonna eat the whole bag. I've gone through the well-known stages of a spree. I emerge remorseful. Remorseful is an understatement for me. Not wanting to be alive anymore, yeah, that's more like it. With a firm resolution not to do it again, I'm going to swear it off, solemn oath. and I will repeat this. And he talked like this over and over and over. And it was like, oh, crap. I've been doing this for 6 years. Make it stop. Make it stop. Make it stop. And then I was all in. I wasn't feeling sorry for myself anymore. I was all in because somebody had told me that if I followed the directions in this book, that this cycle would stop. And I was like, make it stop. I'll do whatever. I'm in. Let's go. And I just kind of put blinders on to everything else that was going on in my life and all the other things that were saying, no. Blinders on, and I immersed myself, gave in 100% to this program because I wanted to experience that entire psychic change. Because if I don't, there's very little hope of my recovery. So I had tried it by myself for 6 years. Nothing had worked. There was very little hope on my recovery, and I was going to go down. And it tells me that I'm going to be restless, irritable, and discontented unless I can again experience a sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few bites, bites which I see others taking with impunity. So I'm living with somebody who's eating this stuff. He is absolutely immune, no consequences at all. But I get this sense of ease and comfort, and without it, I am restless, irritable, and discontent. That is my default state. So, you know, there's a way out. You know, you don't have to keep going through this over and over and over and over and over again. Like, 6 years is a long time, and some people have been doing it a lot longer than 6 years. That's a long time to be sitting here getting the information and just suffering. So there's a way out. It tells us that, I got two more minutes, okay, that once this psychic change has occurred, the person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems, he despaired, like wanting to die, I would say is despair, of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules. Over the holidays, plates and piles of stuff sitting in front of me. It was like somebody had put a bouquet of flowers there. Gee, it was nice. They're pretty. They're cute. But I wouldn't want to eat the flowers. I didn't want to eat them either. And that's what this program will give you. This program gives you the neutrality. And that's that psychic change. The psychic changes, and I'm not thinking about it. Even though it's there, I'm not thinking about it. So therefore, I'm not going to pick it up and eat it. So with that, I want to turn it over to Holly.
Hi, everybody. I'm Holly, and I'm a recovered food addict. And we're going to do Bill's story. And in Bill's story, we're going to identify in, do I think like Bill? Do I act like Bill? Do I feel like Bill? So turn to page one on Bill's story. And we're going to go to the first paragraph on Bill's story. And it says, I forgot the strong warnings and the prejudices of people concerning drink. In time we sailed for over there, I was very lonely, and again I turned to alcohol. So right there, it's talking about that, you know, he was very lonely. And he turned to alcohol. So, you know, I turned to food my thing. And, you know, when I'm lonely, that's what I do, is I turn to food. And then it says down, you know, at the next chapter, it says, ominous warning, which I failed to heed. So there he was talking about that he had denial of, drinking, ominous warning. So there was the denial of, Bill's drinking. So now we're going to turn to the next page. And it says, I took a law course and obtained employment. The drive for ego and success was on. And so, you know, there it's talking about, you know, his ego. And then we go down, it says, at one of the finals, I was too drunk to think and write. Though my drinking was not yet continuous, it disturbed my wife and had long talks when I would still her forebodings by telling her the men of genius concerned best my best projects when drunk and the most majestic constructions of philosophic thought were so derived. So here, you know, he talks about his binges, and he thinks that, you know, he does his drinking, you know, he thinks that his projects where he best derives, you know, his drinking, that, you know, he does his projects best when he's drinking. So let's go to the next page, on page 3. Drinking was taking an important, exhilarating part in my life. So he's talking about, you know, that drinking was taking an important part in his life. Well, food was taking an important part of my life. And, I mean, you know, that was like a priority for me. Food was, you know, a major priority in my life. And, it says, you know, it says here, my judgment and ideas were followed by many of the tuned to paper millions, and the great boom of late 20s was seething and swelling. Drink was taking an important, exhilarating part in my life. So, you know, right there, you know, he talks about that, you know, drinking was taking an important part of his life. Well, food was, you know, taking an important part in my life. And then it goes down to the next paragraph. It says, drinking assumed more serious proportions. It says, continuing all day and almost every night. The remonstrances of my friends terminated in a row, and I became a lone wolf. So, you know, when I was in the food, I was like a lone wolf. I mean, you know, I didn't want to be, you know, bothered with anybody. I mean, I was like, you know, completely like isolated. You know, I wanted nothing to do with anybody. I was, you know, sitting in my apartment, eating by myself. You know, I mean, like it says here, more serious proportions. You know, I mean, I was like completely alone and isolated in my apartment, and you know, wanted nothing to do with anybody. So now we're going to go to the next page, on page 5. It says, liquor ceased to be a luxury, it became a necessity. Food was an absolute necessity for me. I mean, it wasn't, you know, a luxury anymore, it became a necessity. Like, I was like at fast food places. I mean, you know, I couldn't stop eating. I mean, you know, it was no longer a luxury for me. I was at fast food places. You know, I was eating around the clock. I was going out in the middle of the night. It says here, bathtub gin, 2 bottles a day, often 3, got to be a routine. I mean, you know, like, I couldn't stop. I mean, it was just, you know, it was out of control. Now we're going to go down to the bottom of the page. And it says, I woke up. This had to be stopped. I saw that I could not take so much as one drink. I was through forever. Before then, I had written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business, and so I did. I don't know about you, but how many times had you promised that you weren't going to eat again? You know, and, you know, like written, like, you know, like, you know, like resolutions, New Year's resolutions. You know, I mean, how many of us are here, you know, we're not going to eat again, I'm going to do this New Year's resolution, like, I'm swearing off the food, you know, like, this is like my New Year's resolution, like, I'm here, I'm going to, like, you know, do my food plan, I'm going to work the steps, you know, I promise I'm not going to eat again. I mean, I did that a million times, you know. I mean, I can't tell you how many times, like, I swore that I was not going to eat again, you know. I mean, you know, and then it says down here, shortly afterward, I came home drunk. there had been no fight. Where had been my high resolve? I simply didn't know. It hadn't even come to mind. Someone had pushed my drink away and I had taken it. Was I crazy? You know, I mean, how many times, you know, had that happened? Now we're going to go to page 6. One day I walked into a cafe to telephone. In no time, I was beating on the bar, asking myself how it happened. So, you know, why did he go into a bar? I mean, how many times did I step into Dunkin' Donuts, you know, like going into like a fast food restaurant, you know, like Wawa, like, you know, I mean, what was he doing in a bar? You know, like, you know, it says, as the whiskey rose to my head, I told myself I would manage better the next time. Hello, like, I mean, you know, ding, 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 you know. So then we go down here to the next paragraph. It says, the remorse and horror and the hopelessness of the next morning are unforgettable. Oh, God, you know, like that horror, like that feeling that you like, you know, after a binge, you know, the hopelessness and the remorse. I mean, I can't even, like, you know, not being able to get off the couch, you know, like the hangover, you know, you can't function. I mean, you know, that, like, you know, I'm not going to do this again, you know, that, like, over and over and over again, you know, that whole deal. Then we go down and it says, an all-night place supplied me of a dozen glasses of ale. My writhing nerves were stilled at last. I was restless, irritable, and discontent, you know. You know, and I put fast food, Wawa, all-night supplied me with a dozen glasses of ale. There I was standing in Wawa, you know, clearing out the, like, you know, the shelves, you know. It says, you know, then a mental fog settled down. Gin would fix that. Wawa or Dunkin' Donuts would fix that for me, you know. It says, then we're going to go to the next page. Page 7. And it said, people feared for my sanity, and so did I. And, you know, I highlighted that because it says depression and thoughts of suicide set in. And I'm not kidding. I mean, I literally thought about suicide like a million times. I like literally thought, how could I kill myself? I mean, there were so many times when I really, like, suicide looked like a step up for me. It looked like a real option for me. Because I was in the food and I couldn't stop eating and I just didn't want to live, you know. Like, I had had a gastric bypass and, you know, and I had gained all my weight back and I just, like, couldn't stop eating. And I was in such desperation, you know, like, it was, I mean, I just could not stop eating and suicide literally. I was like, you know, holed up in my apartment and I could not stop. And I felt such desperation because I could not stop eating. So, you know, suicide did look like a step up for me. So we'll go to page 8. And it said, page 8, the paragraph, it says, no words can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in the bitter morass of self-pity. Quicksand stretched around me in all directions. I had met my match. I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master. Food was my god. So, you know, I mean, food was my god. You know, I mean, that was really the bottom line for me, you know. That was, you know, that was really like step one for me. Food was my god. So we'll go to the next page. And it said, on page 10, it said, I had always believed in a power greater than myself. I had often pondered these things. I was not an atheist. Few people really are, for that means blind faith in the strange proposition that this universe originated in a cipher and aimlessly rushed nowhere. My intellectual heroes and chemists and astronomers, even the evolutionists, suggested vast laws and forces at work. So, you know, there I began to, like, really, like, consider, like, a power greater than myself. And I, you know, started to think about, like, maybe there was a power greater than myself. And I, you know, started to consider, you know, a God in my life. And then on top of page 11, how much longer do I have?
3 minutes.
How long? Three minutes. Okay. Page 11. For myself, I had adopted those parts which seemed convenient and not too difficult. The rest I had disregarded. So, you know, there I talked about I picked and chose what I was going to do, like a Chinese menu. Like, you know, like I came to OA and it's like I like would pick and choose like what I was going to do. Like I wasn't going to like do this, but I wasn't going to do that. Like I was like, well, I'm going to, you know, work this step, but I'm not going to work that step, you know. And it's like, you know, and that's why like it didn't work for me, you know. I, you know, I didn't work the steps. And, you know, I mean, I needed to work all 12 steps. I mean, that was really the bottom line. You know, so, you know, you don't get to pick and choose what you will and will not do, you know, you need to work all 12 steps. So go down to the next paragraph and it said, God had done for him what he could not do for himself. His human will had failed. So my human will had failed. And, you know, I'm just going to end with this because Bill's story is really long. It says, an alcoholic in his cups is an unlovely creature. Our struggle with them are variously strenuous, comic, and tragic. And, you know, and that's basically, it says, my friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles on all my affairs, particularly, was it imperative to work with others as he has worked with me. Faith without works was dead, he said. And how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work with self-sacrifice for others. And that really is the bottom line. You know, working with others is really the bottom line. Working all the 12 steps. And it says here, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink again. And you know what? And that's really been the, you know, the bottom line for me is if I did not work all the 12 steps and work with others, I would surely eat again. And, you know, it says with us, it is just like that. And with me, it's just like that. If I don't work with others and work all the 12 steps, I don't get to pick and choose like a Chinese menu what I will and will not do, you know. I need to work all the 12 steps. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Maria.
Okay. So now we're going to go on to chapter 2, which is, it's on page 17. There is a solution. Okay, again, first word of the chapter, we. We are not meant to be self-sufficient in this program. This is a we program. Okay. So they use the past tense in that first chapter, first paragraph. Recovered, ED ending. Solved, ED ending. I have this allergy. It's never going to leave me. I'm never going to wake up tomorrow and not be allergic to my alcoholic foods. Right? It's not going to happen. I'm not going to wake up tomorrow and be 5'2" with olive skin. Not going to happen. I accept that. But the thing about the allergy, my mind doesn't want to believe that. But that's the truth. But our disease, we can't tell the truth from the false. So I'm always going to have this allergy, but I'm not suffering in this disease today. It's because I've recovered, I've solved the problem through the process of working the steps and getting the psychic change. I have solved the problem. So that means that I'm not going to like the dinner party or the holiday party or the wedding or the kids are coming over and be like, oh, poor me, I can't have any of that. You know, and wringing my hands and, you know, eating a potato in the bathroom. And I'm not doing any of that stuff today. Because I'm not suffering today. And that's the difference. You know, that's like I'm still going to have the physical allergy, just like I'm going to have my skin color and my height. But I don't have to suffer today. Okay, so everybody here, we're all people who normally would not mix. Yale to jail. We have this common peril. What's the common peril? Common peril is the food. But we also have a common solution. And the common solution is all the steps from 1 to 12. Now, the fellowship is wonderful. There is a lot of power in the fellowship. But is the fellowship alone enough to give me that psychic change? No. Because I had fellowship for 6 years and I didn't get the psychic change. You have to work the steps. And the steps require action. So this isn't a program about thinking or feeling or wanting. It's about doing. It's an action program. Okay, so top of page 18. We have an illness. Okay? And they liken our illness to cancer. Why do they do that? Because cancer is a pretty severe illness. Compulsive eating is just as severe. Okay, so if I have cancer, it's not a moral issue. Well, gee, if she only did this, or she stopped doing that, or, you know, it's not a moral issue. Just like compulsive eating is not a moral issue. We are not bad people. We are not people who are lazy or sloppy or don't care. We are not bad people. We are ill people. We have an illness as severe as cancer. Okay, but with this illness, annihilation of all things worthwhile in life. That's a pretty bad illness. In fact, I did some research like years ago. I wrote my thesis in college on the self-esteem in overweight children. Mm. They said that a child with cancer has more self-esteem than a child who is obese. So, annihilation of all things worthwhile. It totally destroys anything that is worthwhile in your life. It's like that creditor who won't stop calling you and bugging you and sending you letters and calling you at work, whatever, fill in the blank. It's going to take away, it's going to completely destroy all things wonderful. Okay, it also is going to bring misunderstanding, fierce resentment, financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers, warped lives of blameless children, sad wives and husbands, and sad parents. Anyone can increase the list. This is a pretty severe illness. Okay, but the ex-problem drinker who has found the solution, who is properly armed with facts about himself, can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. That's what we're trying to do here. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. Okay, so what is our problem? Our problem is lack of power. It's like standing in front of a tank, waving a stick. You're going to get mowed down because you don't have the power to stop the tank. So the 12 steps are a way for you to gain access to a power, a superhuman power, that is going to stop the tank. Because I tried to stop the tank for a long time and failed utterly. I got mowed down over and over again. I needed a superhuman power to stop the tank, and he has stopped the tank. Okay. There's so much good stuff in this chapter. I would love to read more. Okay. Let's go on to page 20. And there's all these things that people have said to us. I can have one or two. Why don't you just have a little bit? You know? Just have one. You know, it's the holidays. Just have one. You know, why can't she eat like a lady or quit? You know, that fellow can't handle her, you know, her Hershey Kisses. Why don't you try beer and wine? Why don't you go to Whole Foods and try organic food? This is mental twist here. One day, I got a pedicure, right? It's freezing cold day. It's a little bit warmer than today, but it was a little drizzly and everything. It was not a good day. And I'm sitting there in my pedicure slippers from the nail salon, right? There's like these little flimsy, super flimsy flip-flops, right? And I decided that it would be a good idea for me to substitute my fruit, like a fruit is a piece of fruit, it's produce, with artificially stevia sweetened chocolate from Whole Foods. It sounded like a really good idea. So I go into the Whole Foods in my flimsy pedicure slippers with my pants rolled up. And I look at the stevia sweetened chocolate. It's organic. It's dark. It's like dark chocolate. It's so much better for you, right? So, it's good for your heart. So, and they're on sale. They're on sale for $2, $3. Well, I'm just going to have two pieces. It's going to be my fruit. And I'm going to put the rest away. I'm going to have enough for 2 weeks. Well, you know what happened. Yeah. I took it home and I ate it all. And I had the runs and everything else. I ate it all. And then, of course, I went on to the regularly sweetened stuff. So, you know, that doesn't sound very ladylike to me. But anyway, that's where, you know, eating organic foods got me. Why don't you lay off the hard stuff? His willpower must be weak. He could stop if he wanted to. Her, you know, she's just so lazy and sloppy. You know, they really don't care. She's such a sweet girl. He's such a great guy. I should think he'd stop for her, for his sake. He's such a good guy, that Lou, you know. At least she should stop for his sake. The doctor told me that if I continued to eat, that I could develop diabetes, that it was going to aggravate my arthritis, but there I am, binging again. Now, if I could do any of these things, I wouldn't be sitting here right now. You know, I would have done it. We've all tried to do it. I wouldn't be sitting here right now. You know, not being able to do these things is why I'm here in Overeaters Anonymous. These things don't work. Why don't they work? Okay, because there's three different kinds of eaters. Moderate eaters. Moderate eater is my husband. He's a wonderful guy. He really is, even though he can eat only one Hershey Kiss and walk away. He has one, he's done. Even his favorite foods. He has two. He loves tacos. Tacos are his favorite food. You know, if you could make anything for Louis, he would want a taco. He's only going to have a few. He's not going to eat the whole tray. You know, he's not going to binge. He's not going to have it. He might not have them again for 2 months. He's a moderate eater. He could take it or leave it alone. Okay, then there's the hard eater. Mm-hmm. What's the hard eater? Well, his cousin was a hard eater. He had put on about 40 or 50 pounds. We're at this family reunion. He's telling everybody, I went to the doctor. The doctor said, listen, Michael, you keep eating, you're going to have a heart attack. Your blood results, blah, blah, blah. You know, this is not good. Your triglycerides. You got to do something. Michael goes to Weight Watchers. He gets his star or his pin or whatever they're giving out these days. And he has kept his weight off. He thinks this is wonderful. He finds it difficult. He finds it troublesome at times, but he can do it. He doesn't understand why everybody doesn't do it. He's not a moderate eater because he wouldn't have gotten overweight if he was a moderate eater. He's a hard eater. You know, he finds it difficult and troublesome, but he can do it. Now, compulsive eater. The doctor could tell me whatever they want. I'm still going to go out and eat. I might have started off as a hard eater. I don't think I ever did what I can remember being a little kid and having an absolute fit at my 5-year-old birthday party because my mother got me strawberry shortcake, and my favorite cake was chocolate cake. And I was like, I had to have that cake. And I remember having a tantrum, and my grandmother and my mother being, it's okay, Ray, it's all right. Sorry, we're going to get you chocolate. Don't worry. That was me. Okay, so I've lost all control of my eating once I start. I lose all control. So my disposition while eating resembles my normal nature but little. I'm a very outgoing social type person. When I'm in my disease, I'm like, you heard Holly, I'm like locked up in the house. I'm not answering the phone. I'm not answering the door. I might answer a text message, but I'm not talking to anybody. Leave me to hell alone. A lot of times I just went up to my bed with my binge food, you know. So this is not my normal nature at all. I become disgustingly and even dangerously antisocial. A woman laying in bed with, like, wrappers and boxes around her, disgustingly, dangerously antisocial. Getting tight at exactly the wrong moment, particularly when some important decision must be, or engagement must be kept. Hello, I'm sick. Can't do it today. I'm not coming in. I'm perfectly sensible and well-balanced concerning everything except for food, but in that respect, I'm incredibly dishonest and selfish. I chose food above everything. Everything. I chose food above my husband. I chose food above my kids. I chose food above my grandchildren, my work, everything. Food. It's like, you know, this horrible lover, you know, that you just want to get away from, but you can't. And I was dishonest and I was selfish. All I cared about and all I thought about from morning to night was, what was I going to eat? How was I going to eat it? When was I going to eat it? How was I going to cover it up? And how was I going to find clothes to fit me the next day? That was my life. There was no room in there for, hey, Mom, honey, nothing. I didn't want to be bothered. Dishonest and selfish. So I go to bed so intoxicated, I ought to sleep the whole night through. But early the next day, I'm looking for the food I misplaced the night before. Okay, so somebody gave me this analogy once. Okay, we all go out. We're going to go out. We're all going to go to the bar. And we're all going to have 3 shots of tequila, right? We're getting drunk. Okay, the difference is the next day, the unaffected person is going to wake up, and they're not going to want to look at alcohol. They're done. They're like, oh, you know, it's like that. They're done. But the affected person is going to look for what they misplaced the night before. I'm going to wake up from those 3 shots and I'm going to want more. I'm going to be looking for the candy. I'm going to be looking for the fast food. You know, fill in the blank. I'm going to be looking for it because I got to have more. So I should be done, but I'm really not. I just want more. That's the craving. That's the allergy. Let's see. I got 2 more minutes. Okay. Top page 23. Tattoo this on your forehead. Okay, it's in the middle of the first paragraph, or actually beginning of the first paragraph. Starts with the word therefore. Mm-hmm. Therefore, the main problem of the compulsive eater centers in his mind rather than in his body. The problem starts in my mind. So if I put the food down, and in my mind, I think, well, wouldn't it be a good idea to substitute sugar-free chocolate for a piece of fruit? It's starting in my mind. You know, once I put the food down, the mind kicks in. It tells me, oh, well, why don't you try it this way and it'll be okay. So the problem starts in our mind. That's why we need a psychic change, because once we get the psychic change, the problem's not starting in our mind anymore. So it's not that we need to tattoo on our forehead. Why do we do it? We don't know why. You know, it's like, why am I 5'6"? Why do I have pale skin? I don't know. I just do. Okay, so here's a great definition of the mental twist on page 14. It's in the italics. Anything in the italics is very, very important. It was much more expensive to print it that way at the time this book was first printed, so they saved it for the important stuff. So we don't know why we have it. We've lost this power of choice in food. So-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. Okay, and here's the key. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory or suffering of humiliation of even a week or a month ago. So, maybe the day before I went in my pedicure slippers, maybe the day before I might have been able to say no. Mm-hmm. Or even that morning, I might have been able to say no. I was able to bring into my mind with sufficient force the reasons why I shouldn't have it. But, and I don't know when they are, it says that we are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force. So even if I am thinking, hey, that doesn't sound like a really good idea, it's too hazy, it's too foggy, it's not getting through, and the bad idea wins out. All right, so with that, I'm going to hand it over to Ms. Holly.
Okay. All right, gang, so now we're going to do more about alcoholism on page 30. So everybody turn to page 30. And I'll try and make it entertaining. All right. So the first paragraph is like a banner paragraph. It says, most of us have been unwilling to admit we were alcoholic. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove that we could drink like other people. The idea that someday he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of his illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. So, I said, well, I was different because I had a gastric bypass and I wasn't a food addict. And I really believed that. Like, I really believed that I wasn't a food addict, and I was never coming back to Overeaters Anonymous. Like, I wasn't like you people. Like, I didn't need you people. I didn't need the 12 steps. Like, you guys were completely crazy, you know? And, I was so delusional. You know, and the denial, don't even know I am lying. Like, I really believed that's what I really believed, you know, and I really believed that I was going to control my food, you know, and I mean, countless vain attempts. I mean, I can tell you, I could list, all the things that I did, you know. I was hypnotized. I mean, I went to Tops. I went to, you know, Weight Watchers. I, you know, did all those drinks. And I mean, you know, you name it, I did it, you know. The best one was being hypnotized. That was really funny, you know. Like, I pretended that, like, it worked. Like, I went to this hypnotist and I pretended that it worked, you know. And I was like, you know, yeah, like, you know, please. You know, it says here we learned that we had to fully concede to the, you know, the innermost selves that we were alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we were like other people or presently may be has to be smashed. And, you know, like, I really, like, needed to buy in to this process. Like, I needed to, you know, buy into the 12 steps. You know, that was, like, for me, that was step one. Like, I needed to buy into, you know, the process. And it's so funny because there's somebody here, you know, that, like, I came here and I was sitting here and the person kept saying to me, you know, I can take you through the steps. And I'm like, no, I'm good. And they kept saying to me, you know, I can take you through the steps. And I'm like, nah, I'm good. And, like, every week I kept showing up here. And they were real persistent, you know. And they kept saying to me, I can take you through the steps. And I'm like, nah, I'm good, you know. And, you know, it was like, finally, like, I was like, oh, you know what, for Pete's sake, I'll just go through the steps, you know, just to, like, get them off my back, you know what I mean? And it was like, and I really thought that this was a bunch of hocus pocus, and I really, you know, didn't believe, like, in the steps. I just thought that, like, going through the steps was just a bunch of shenanigans, and I really didn't believe that it worked. And I finally went through the 12 steps, and I had a spiritual awakening. And it was like a blessing. I mean, it was such an absolute blessing, you know. And I mean, I put here radical self-acceptance. Radical self-acceptance. And then I go down to the next paragraph, and it says, we are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. You know, and that is, like, absolutely so true. We get worse, never better. Like, it doesn't get any better. I mean, you know, to have your half your stomach cut away and then gain weight and then, like, you know, have to, you know, come back. I mean, that, you know, come back to Overeaters Anonymous. Like, we get worse, never better. You know, it doesn't get any better. I mean, I thought that, like, I was going to have the gastric bypass, and I thought that, like, my life was going to, it was a fairy wand, and, like, my life was just going to be miraculously cured. Like, I was going to, like, miraculously get thin, and I was going to be a tall, thin blonde, you know what I mean? And, you know, my life was, like, you know, like Kim says, Brad Pitt was going to show up at my door, you know, and I was going to, like, live happily ever after. But, you know, I had to work the 12, I had to come to Overeaters Anonymous and work the 12 steps, pick up the spiritual tools, and work the 12 steps, you know, and I, you know, needed to have a spiritual awakening. So, the next page, on page 31, it says, if anyone who is showing inability to control his drinking can do the right about face and drink like a gentleman, our hats are off to him. Well, I didn't drink like a lady, that's for sure. I mean, you know, I was like, you know, I was going, you know, through drive-thrus ordering like three orders, you know what I mean? And, you know, I was ordering for me, my boyfriend, you know, my best friend, and, you know, whoever else, you know what I mean? And then, you know, it talks about here are some of the methods, you know, that we tried, you know, limiting our number of, you know, drinking alone, never drinking in the morning, drinking only at home. I mean, you know, I tried a million different methods. So, and then down at the bottom of the page, it says, we do not pronounce any individual alcoholic, but you can quickly diagnose yourself. Step over to the nearest bar room and try some controlled drinking. Try to drink and stop abruptly more than once. You know, how's that working for you? Have, you know, try and, like, stop drinking, you know, try and stop eating abruptly. You know what I mean? I don't know about you, but I haven't been successful at that, you know? Then go over to page 33 and, it says here, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. You know, and, like, I didn't want to believe that. Once a food addict, always a food addict. Like, I just, you know, like, I didn't want to believe that. You know, I thought, like, maybe I was different. But, you know, I come to find out that, you know, I'm not, you know, I'm not different. And then, you know, down the next, you know, at the underneath that, it says there must be no reservation of any kind or any lurking notion that someday we will be immune to alcohol. You know, and, you know, like, no reservations, like, no reservations, like, none at the Hilton, none at, you know, like, you know, like, you know, like Maria talked about, no reservations of any kind. Like, I would go into, like, you know, Whole Foods, and I would, like, get these, like, things that were, like, they were sugar and flour free, you know, and, like, because they were sugar and flour free, I would be, like, well, they're sugar and flour free, you know, and, you know, I mean, they're okay, but, like, they're the size of tires, you know what I mean? And, you know, they don't have any sugar and flour in them, you know, and, you know, but, like, they're the size of tires, you know what I mean? And it's, like, I mean, you know, how insane, you know? And, like, it says here, because of the peculiar mental twist already acquired, we will find that it can win out. My book is, like, falling apart here. Anyway, let's go to page 34. It says, if anyone questions whether he has entered the dangerous area, let him try leaving liquor alone for 1 year. If he is a real alcoholic, very far advanced, there is a scant chance of success. So, you know, like I put testing to see if I'm a real food addict. And then we go down, it says, for those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. So it says whether such a person can quit upon a spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not. And that's the mental twist right there. There's the mental twist right there. So on the next page here, it says, so now we got the examples. Our first example is our friend Jim. I love Jim. He has everything, okay? And it says here, I love this. All went well for a time. It says, you know, he made a beginning. His family was reassembled, and he began to work as a salesman for business. He had lost through drinking. All went well for a time. But he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. To his consternation, he found himself drunk half a dozen times in rapid succession. On each of these occasions, we worked with him. We reviewed carefully what had happened. He agreed he was a real alcoholic in a serious condition. He knew he faced a trip to the asylum if he kept on. Moreover, he would lose his family, for whom he had a deep affection. So here, the bottom line is that he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. I mean, that was the bottom line. So we'll go to the next page. And it says here on page 36, this is me. This is totally me. Suddenly, the thought crossed my mind that if I were to put 1 ounce of whiskey in my milk, it couldn't hurt me on a full stomach. I ordered a whiskey and poured it into the milk. I vaguely sensed that I was being any too smart. So that's like me. It's like I walk into Whole Foods, you know what I mean, and I see these things, you know, and it looks like a good idea. It's sugar and flour free. You know, they're the size of tires, you know what I mean, but like, you know, I decide, you know, I'm going to take them home because they're sugar and flour free, you know? And it's like, that's like, you know, insanity. How much longer do I have?
2 minutes.
2 minutes. Okay. Let's see. Okay, here we go. So it says here, once more, the alcoholic at certain times has an effective mental defense against the first drink. Effective mental defense against the first drink, except a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. So I said that life gets loud. And,
what page
are you on? Last page, 43.
Oh, I'm on page 43. So, the first defense must come from a higher power. The answer is a spiritual solution, and, you got to pick up the tools and pick up the steps.
You're good.
All right.
10 o'clock.
And that's it.
Bingo.
Okay, so it's 10 a.m. at this